Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished entrepreneur, someone who's making waves in the world of entrepreneurship, Mr. Srikanth Shastri from India. Srikanth, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you. Srikanth is the chairman of I3G Advisory Network. He's the president of Thai Delhi, an NCR, and some of you may know that I'm also a member of Thai. He's an entrepreneur with two successful exits and is the director of several organizations. So, Srikanth, before I go further, I want to ask you about your exits and at what stage did you decide to exit?
Well, I started my entrepreneurial journey in 1995 and completely bootstrapped. First generation entrepreneur. There are three of us who got together. We pulled in family savings. I sold my Maruti Omni car. Okay. I emptied out my provident fund, maxed out 5 credit cards. That's how 15 lakhs came together. Okay. So bootstrapped, very high risk. And we had made a business plan, which I still carry. And year one was completely hunky-dory. So I thought business is like a cakewalk. We became very cocky. And 3 years after starting, came close to bankruptcy. Somehow managed to pull through that. But then we entered the new millennium on a high. But around 2003-04, the business was doing well. We had two paths that we could possibly take. We were already India and Southeast Asia's largest marketing services organization. We had the option of saying, should we make a global play and really become a big global player because it's a very fragmented space? Or should I partner with a global organization and sell my stake? Decided to do the latter, and that's how exit happened, because as a first generation entrepreneur, I wanted to find security for my family. Having come close to bankruptcy one, I had no fallback option if the business failed. So that was essentially a first generation entrepreneur saying, I've taken all the risks I should have, put my family through all the trouble that I could have or I'm entitled to, but now let me secure my family. So 2004, I started looking for possible exit options. And then I traveled across the world, met 9 global companies. 5 of them came and made offers. And finally, we sold 60% stake to the Publicis Group.
Wow.
Okay. That's how exit happened. But I had a second business, which was a spin-off from the first one. Same logic, sold it to the Dutch group called Randstad. So both exits happened in the 2006 to 2010 timeframe over Randstad.
Fascinating. And then you started I3G.
So I3G happened much later, actually. So between 2010 and 13, the Publicis Group of France requested me to stay back as India chairperson to look after their digital expansion. So I, as chairman of Indian business, I did M&A for them, acquired 3 companies, tripled the size of their digital business. But 2013 to 16, I was back to being a semi-entrepreneur. I actually said, a friend of mine out of Singapore was setting up a big data and AI product company. And he said, will you join me? Will you become the CEO? I said, none of that. If I can get some new experience, I'm on board as the co-founder, but 50% of my time. So I actually carried a briefcase around and made 200 sales calls in those 3 years across the world. I've never sold a tech product outside India before. So that's what I did. Moved to US for 2 years. 2017, when I came back, which is when I said, look, let me put my house in order and let me figure out the portfolio of things I want to do. So I3G is essentially me as a one-person outfit. It's a portfolio that I churn all the time to ensure I do stuff that I enjoy, junk out the stuff that I don't do. Occasionally, I pull in other people as a network of people to help with projects, but it's essentially my portfolio, my time, my fun, actually.
Incredible. And what are the areas you work in?
So my I evolved it over a period of time. But today what it stands for, and this is a learning that I had in 2020, when I led a task force of 20 people to help a startup take an idea to manufactured ICU ventilator to the market in 90 days. So I wrote a book about it. And that's when we developed a new accelerated growth model for the post-pandemic world, which basically says, look, the West takes long periods of time to come up with new products. To take an example, a ventilator in the West, the big companies take 18 to 24 months to take it to the market. Mm. We did that in 90 days without cutting any corners. Mm. So there's a methodology and process involved there, bringing experts global, just as you do your podcast globally. Mm. We brought in 20 experts from across the world remotely, manufacturing experts, supply chain expert, design expert, marketing expert, all coming together to help companies. So that model is what I'm perfecting now. And as my I3G advisory practice, that methodology is that I take to companies. But I mostly help companies in the growth phase of their startup journey. Mm. Occasionally, I get involved with bigger companies, but essentially, it's accelerated growth in the post-pandemic world.
Wow. So, Srikanth, let's talk about Thai.
Yeah.
And then we'll come to several questions for you on startups and entrepreneurship. Thai as an organization has grown incredibly over the years into a global body. Let me start by asking you, for our young viewers and listeners, what is Thai and what is the kind of work you do?
Sure. So Thai started in the 90s when entrepreneurship was still not a buzzword that it is today. At that point of time, it was about getting people of Indian origin who are entrepreneurs together to learn from each other. That was the reason for its existence. And it did incredibly well for the first 20 years of this millennium. It really got people educated about how do you create and launch a new venture? What's the network that you can lean upon? Where do you get funding from? So people had no access to that information, but currently, we're in the midst of a massive transformation to say, because information is available freely on the internet.
Right.
Can I therefore find ways to provide you your needs in this new world? One is big mentoring. How do we get you to the right mentor? It need not be one mentor. There's a mentor who specializes in your domain. There's a mentor who could help you in supply chain or finance. Mm. Finding the right pool of mentors is one.
Correct.
Second is bringing to you a set of skill sets through ongoing. We have a concept called a startup school. Mm-hmm. So we run courses and programs that help those startups pick up skills that they may be missing. So that's mm-hmm. a second one. Mm-hmm. So mentoring and education is top of the list. The other pillars are funding, mm-hmm. access to funding. That's mm-hmm. a big one, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is, of course, networking. So those together make up the what we do. A lot of this is done through events and conferences. A lot of it is done through one-to-one interactions with mentors. And a lot of them is done in small groups also. So basically, it's about giving you an ecosystem, because being an entrepreneur is a lonely journey. How do you hang out with people who understand your pain, are able to empathize, but yet guide you without any vested interest? So the people at Thai are giving back to younger entrepreneurs, and that's what Thai is about.
Amazing. So from the perspective of a young entrepreneur or a potential young entrepreneur, you already outlined the benefits of joining Thai. What is the process of joining?
So that's pretty straightforward, actually. I mean, we have, broadly speaking, two categories of members across the 60 countries that Thai is in. One is a charter member. That's someone who's an experienced entrepreneur who wants to give back and pay forward. And then you sign up on the website or sign up through a referral or whatever. Then there's a category of regular members. That's for aspiring entrepreneurs, early stage entrepreneurs. It's a token fee, but you get access to all those senior folks who are there to help you. You get access to all the events and conferences and mentoring. So signing up is no rocket science. I think it's an open door policy. It's just that to be a charter member, you need to be an experienced entrepreneur who's in a giving back mode rather than receiving. The regular members are the ones who are coming there to receive expert advice and then learn and grow faster.
Interesting. And how many members are there in Thai globally?
That number changes, but I can tell you in Delhi NCR, we have about 300 odd charter members here, which are experienced entrepreneurs. And we have about a few thousand, 3,000 to 4,000 regular members, actually.
And a new member who joins can access the other chapters as well.
Yeah. So a charter member is part of a global directory. So imagine you're traveling to France or to US and you want to connect with a local person for guidance, advice, or just networking. It's a database that's available. As far as the regular members are concerned, once again, they reach out and say, I need help in such and such area and such city, can someone connect? So the lot of cross-chapter stuff that we do. We have interactions between London and Delhi. Recently, we brought together all the chapters in India. So you have really a many, it's a cross web of connections and anyone can dip into it, actually.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, fantastic. And I hope a lot of the people who are viewing us and listening to us will check out Tai and consider joining, because, you know, you could probably have a chapter in whichever city you're going to be listening from. So Shikha, now let's talk a little bit about your vast experience as a startup and an entrepreneur. Let me start with asking you that, based on all your experience with two successful exits and talking to so many people and now leading Tai, should one have a co-founder or should one go solo?
So I'm a firm believer in the fact that you need a co-founder, or co-founders for that matter. Although there are people like Mark Zuckerberg who've never had a co-founder but still made Facebook big. So, but even if you talk to an investor today, they will put it bluntly, what happens tomorrow if you get run over by a bus?
Correct.
My money goes down the tube. And therefore people want co-founders. That's reason number one. Reason number two is that because the world is changing so fast, no single founder is a superhuman who has every skill that is required. Of course, people can learn over a period of time, but because the world is moving so fast, you don't have a chance to make that mistake and retrace your path, correct, which is why you need two or three people with complementary skills. And that's important. You can't have three sales guys getting together and say, we want to be co-founders. I think complementarity of skills is exceedingly important. And today, one of the things I believe that co-founding teams should have a CTO, a tech co-founder. That is a must, because today technology as a leverage is the single biggest leverage that an entrepreneur gets, actually.
Very well said. Very well said. And my follow-up question to that is that what, in your opinion, are some of the key qualities a startup entrepreneur should have?
Right. So I would say at an early stage, and these qualities have to change over a period of time. People just have to grow. But let me talk about what people need to get started. I think first is a deep passion for solving a particular problem. You need to find a problem that's large enough. You need to find a problem that's important enough. And you need to have both the passion and expertise to say, look, I can solve this. So problem, solution, and passion coming together is one attribute. The second one is that the person needs to have the ability to persist in the face of daunting failures. And therefore, that resilience is absolutely important. That's the second one. Third one is ability to tolerate ambiguity. Unlike a corporate job where job descriptions are well laid out and you're expected to operate in a narrow sliver of work, here everything is unknown. And you're kind of charting your own path as you go along. A lot of people are uncomfortable with ambiguity. But the ability to tolerate huge amounts of ambiguity consistently is the third attribute, actually. So those are the three buckets I would put.
Amazing. I mean, absolutely amazing. And again, moving further from the attributes or qualities, what, in your opinion, are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
So a few things, actually. One is something that I've learned and I've been telling people consistently. It's finding the right speed. Some people move too slow, and because you're cautious, because you're over analytical, you want to over engineer every solution. You move too slow, someone's taken the market away, and you're gone. The opposite end of the spectrum is some people move too fast, trying out too many ideas at the same time. You do need to experiment with multiple ideas, do A-B testing and all of that. But a lot of entrepreneurs want to find a new toy every month. They just revel in a new idea every month, as a result of which you do not give time or do not do justice to any idea systematically. So finding the right balance of speed is one.
Okay.
If I put that aside, the two other things, which were wisdom I acquired a wise old man told me when I started my business, he said the only reason businesses fail are two reasons. One, you either run out of money, or second, the partners fight among themselves. So you need to watch your cash flows carefully, when to raise money before you run out of money. It's like that famous Rajnikant movie. Does the bullet hit the villain has captured the heroine. The villain has given instructions to shoot her. Does the bullet hit the heroine first, or does Rajnikant reach there first? So raising funding at the right time is a similar Rajnikant situation. Another one is partners falling out. That is the other big reason why businesses fail. You need co-founders, but there are problems, chemistry, money-related problems, or some people, some founders grow, some don't, and therefore there's a fallout. So three reasons: finding the right balance of speed, second is not running out of money, and third is partners not falling out. Amazing. Three biggest reasons of
failure. Amazing. And that gives me an interesting segue to my next question, you know, about whether the bullet reaches the heroine, or the money reaches the heroine, or Rajnikant reaches. There's often a question that is asked for a startup founder: should they bootstrap as long as possible, or should they raise money as soon as it's available?
Yeah. So like most things in life, this is lies in the gray part, not a black, not a white.
Correct.
But my general advice to founders is that you need to demonstrate skin in the game for your sake and for your investors' sake by putting in some of your own savings and money initially. That's when you'll develop conviction. Once you do that, please go and ask friends and family for money. People, Indians hesitate to ask friends and family for money. But here my argument is, they're not doing you a favor. You're doing them a favor. Tomorrow, if you become a successful company, they'll say, why didn't you give me shares in your company?
Correct.
So position it to them to say, look, here's an opportunity. I'm not forcing you. I put in my own skin in the game, and therefore, would you like to? So stage two is that. After that, go and raise institutional money. Now, today, there's a flood of institutional money available. So people, a lot of founders want to raise money sooner rather than later. But the problem is, when you raise institutional money too soon, you own a minuscule share of the company.
Right.
And on the other hand, if you raise money later, and Nykaa is a great example, the founding family owned 53% of the company when the business went public. Even more extreme view, Latent View Analytics company out of Chennai owned 100% of the business when they went to an IPO. So how much of the company do you want to own over a period of time? Because not just a question of ownership as a vanity metric. It's also about how much rights do you have with respect to the direction of the company. So it's a balancing act. There's a lot of money available. And if you want it, you can be flush. I mean, I know companies who raise $50 million every few months. It's available, but it's a bad habit. It's a narcotic, honestly.
I agree with you. The other question that is often asked from startups, and I'd love to get your perspective, is when should a startup start to scale up?
So I think the answer to that is fairly straightforward. The startup world uses a jargon called product market fit. Which in my word is quite, the way I explain to young people is fairly simple. You know, you achieve product market fit when you're no longer thrusting your product or service down a customer's throat. You're not pushing, but rather there's a natural pull to it. You know, people love your product. People are asking for it. People are telling their friends about it. And therefore, you will, as a founder, you will sense it. You know that you're not overspending on marketing to make your product accepted. So when the product and market achieve a fit, it's like saying, okay, I had money to fill 5 liters of petrol to take my car from point A to point B. Then you tell my investor, you know, if you give me a lot more money, I'll have a full tank and I can travel 200 kilometers. That's when you raise funding, when you know that I can scale up now because I know my car can run. Now I want more money to make the car run a longer distance. That's the way I would see scaling, actually.
Fascinating. So I'm now going to move to the last segment of our conversation. A few questions for you, what I call personal questions. Because my viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest a little better. And in your case, so many people will want to know you as the boss of Thai Delhi this year. Srikanth, if you were to look back at a successful life, two successful exits, leading a large organization, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your life or your career?
Sure. So the first one was clearly going to IIT when I was 17. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a small town in Maharashtra. As I was growing up, my first two languages were Marathi and Tamil. Mm-hmm. Hindi came after that. English was at number four.
Okay.
All of that changed. So I was a complete naive person from a small town. Mm-hmm. I would call myself a vernacular person. Mm-hmm. Moving to IIT Kanpur, everything changed. Mm-hmm. Made a completely different circle of friends from across the country. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, Hindi and English became my number one and number two languages. Mm-hmm. Confidence grows because mm-hmm. at the age of 17, and that was a five-year curriculum we yep. take in those days, you get all the shocks that you want with right. people, bright people all around you, suddenly grow up. So to me, that was one big life changing. Mm. Right? The second was when I became an entrepreneur. Mm. It's something that I always wanted to do. But being an entrepreneur actually is very different, particularly when you know you're down to your last 10 rupees in your wallet. Mm. After that, you know, nothing can ever faze you in life. And therefore, right. that's the biggest life event. The third one is the last few years where I believe that at this stage, I'm having the most fun I've ever had. I'm at my creative best, whether it was the ventilator project that I co-led, helping a startup get a world-class product out in 90 days, and then mm-hmm. another 90 days writing a book about mm-hmm. it. I just have a portfolio of stuff, which is complete fun. And therefore, this is the third event in my life, which I believe is great.
Amazing. Amazing. I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is that when you look back at a very successful life, what does success mean to Srikanth?
Quite simply, I mean, money is not even on that list anywhere at all. But for me, the success is two things, actually. One, from my personal standpoint, it's always learning something new and getting new experience. So mm. that is top of my list. Mm. And second is contributing to the world around me, whether it is the world of entrepreneurship, whether it is the society at large. Mm. So that is the second. Have I done enough to contribute? Mm. And have I learned enough and I've gained enough experiences? To me, those are the only two success metrics that matter.
Fantastic. On. Fantastic. And my last question to you, come back to entrepreneurs. And this is for the many, many young people who will listen to our conversation. What would your advice be to a young individual who's starting off on her or his entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah. So I first advise is do it now. Don't hesitate. You'll have parental pressure, peer pressure, go and take a safe job. Please, they don't know this world at all. If there was ever an opportunity for you to break out, for India to break out, this is the time. Go and do it. You'll have objections. I'll give you five ways of handling those objections. Mm-hmm. But go out and become an entrepreneur now. Second one is that find a big real problem to solve. Don't do something flippant just because it's a cool app. Mm-hmm. Find a big problem to solve. India has the most problems in the world and therefore most number of opportunities. Go and find a big one to solve. Mm-hmm. That would be my second word of advice.
Fantastic. Srikanth, on that note of go and do it now and find a big problem to solve, I just want to say thank you for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your incredible journey, about all the work that you have been doing at I3G Advisory Network. Thank you for talking to me at such length about Thai Delhi. And I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to us who don't know about Thai, do go and check it out and sign up as members. I have benefited a lot and I'm now a charter member. And thank you again for talking to me at such length on startups and all the points that you gave us about startups and the challenges they face. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me here, Ashutosh. It's been really great fun talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.